What's up, everybody? Welcome to Value Town. We're finally back from a long, long break. I'm Chanman V, and I'm joined today by three guys you know very, very well in the Hearthstone community. Got Mayor of Value Town Trump, Dragon Master himself, Brian Kibler, and a leader of Team Tempo Storm, and our resident salt expert, of course, Raynad. How's everybody doing today?
I'm doing great.
All right, everybody have a good weekend. Labor Day, you guys do anything special?
Well, my birthday was yesterday,
and
the federal government was nice to make it a national holiday, and I appreciate that.
Nice. Yeah, my birthday was on Saturday too. I have the Labor Day holiday every once in a while too. It's nice, definitely good. But yeah, so I'm happy to have you guys, three guys, on the show today to discuss some cards. Those of you who have never seen Value Town today, that's what we do on the show. We talk cards, decks, meta, and debate them, discuss them, all that good stuff. So that's what we're going to do today. And then at the very end, guys, we'll take some questions from you guys too. What was that? And the questions we'll take are, well, I'll choose from basically the comments in the post on chanmanv.tv. I have a mod that's just like spamming it in the Twitch chat right now. We'll choose five at the end, so be sure to post your questions there, and we'll try to ask them. But to kick things off, I figured we'd start by just getting general thoughts on TGT so far. It's been out about 2 weeks now, or just over 2 weeks now, and I want to just get your general opinions before we get, you know, dig deep into some more cards and decks. Trump, want to start us off?
All right, well, to be as general as possible, I guess, it spawned a few new decks, like, not that many, a few. It bolstered quite a few, and that's a good quick summary.
Yeah, I mean, TGT has been, it's been cool. I mean, there's a lot of stuff there that I think hasn't necessarily been fully explored. You know, I think it'll take some time before people really have an opportunity to dig as deep into some sort of the more unusual cards than, you know, really the time that we've had so far. There's been a couple big events, but not really that many after, you know, a sort of long testing period, which is usually what people want before they really jump into something really new.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we haven't seen, as far as like the top tier decks go, like if I were to play a tournament and I have to pick three decks, I'm not going to be playing very many TGT cards, and that's not because the set isn't great, it's just because the TGT cards were like so niche and have to be played in these specific archetypes that do take a lot of time to refine. So like when Blackrock came out, it was, there were Grim Patron decks for the first month, but they were all pretty awful. There was one or two guys taking it to like top 10 because they figured out like Warsong Commander first, but it took like a month and a half or something before that deck really became like polished enough to the point of being, you know, the best deck in the game. So I think it's going to be kind of the same thing with TGT, where we have to wait and see how certain cards fit into certain decks. And right now people are just kind of going with the safe bet because the decks that are popular right now, things like Patron and Handlock, you know, they've been around for months or years, and they've been polished so much that they're going to just be naturally favored against the newer strategies, because newer strategies are playing suboptimal cards right now. So it's going to take some time to weed those out, and then I think we'll start seeing more and more TGT cards as expansions out.
What are your thoughts on the Inspire mechanic so far, or general thoughts?
Go ahead.
No, you first. I don't really know what I would say.
I think Inspire is pretty cool as a constructed mechanic. I think that it's when you're playing in a format where there's reasonably efficient removal and the reasonably fast decks that can overpower, you know, people who are trying to do slower things. It's interesting to, you know, because it encourages a different style of gameplay. I actually kind of hate it in Arena because it can snowball games just massively. Like, a lot of the good Inspire cards just make it impossible to ever, you know, come back. Like, things like the Veldir or whatever and Kodo Rider, like, those are the sort of thing that, you know, it just buries you under advantage every single turn.
Yeah, for Constructed, I think some cards are very strong, like Murloc Knight, but even those aren't seeing play because, like, the Mysterious Challenger Paladin deck is just so strong right now. And I think it's just because it's kind of like a new format every time an expansion comes out. And when it's a new expansion just coming out and it is a new format, then the linear strategies do a lot better than they do later in the metagame. So things like Mysterious Challenger just being like a proactive deck that plays good stuff and secrets makes it happen to match up well against a deck that is going to need more specific one-ofs, more polish, like slower mid-rangey Paladin. So, mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, there isn't really an Inspire card right now that I would say is, like, exceptional. Off the top of my head, Murloc Knight seems like the best. The Priest one's actually really good, too. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just going to take time for those mid-range decks to kind of come in.
Trump?
Yeah, pretty much. I actually kind of like Inspire in Arena the most. I feel like where the Grand Tournament shined was in the Arena. I think it's a little bit cool that they set it up so that the Grand Tournament cards show up more in Arena, so you see the cards more often. And cards are, for the most part, all really good in Arena. In Constructed, the Inspired, as many people predicted, does turn out to be a bit too slow. So not that many cards are getting their chance. Some people expected Inspire decks to be a thing, but it's just really tough to chain all of those to stick on the board. And I don't think any top Constructed player really considered that to be a deck. That's okay, though. The Inspire mechanic is fine to not just be in a deck with an Inspire theme. It can just be like Battle Cry, where you just put in the better Inspire cards. It's a fine mechanic, and kind of hope to see it more later.
All right. How about Joust? Have you guys run into any cards that have been very powerful because of the Joust mechanic?
I think the best Joust card is probably the Tuskar Jouster guy. That can sort of the 5/5 for 5 that can kind of replace Paladin. Healbot in Paladin decks, though amusingly it can actually mean that you end up losing some of your potential edge against like warrior decks because you're putting an Alexstrasza and you can't guaranteed heal out of kill range. But I do think that Joust is interesting because of the way that it influences deck building, and it also is like something like Tuskar Jouster is a card that where you really want the life gain is usually against an aggressive deck where your deck is most likely going to win Jousts. And, you know, like having to think about, okay, well, do I want to play, Zombie Chows or maybe other things at the low drops that aren't necessarily minions because I want to be more likely to win Jousts? That's kind of an interesting dynamic there. But again, it's not really the sort of thing that is like, okay, this is what my deck is built around. It's more, most of the Joust cards typically are fairly incidental.
Yeah, I think that for the most part, the Joust mechanic's been pretty underwhelming so far, and a big part of it is inconsistency. Like, if I'm going to dedicate a slot in my deck to being good against aggro, I need to make sure that it's good against aggro. So, like, a lot of times, I'd prefer to play a Healbot over the Tuskar Jouster because, like, the 25% of the time that I'm not going to gain the life against a mid-range Hunter deck is going to lose me the game. So the +2/+2 stats sometimes don't make up for it. So it's interesting. Like, I don't know what it would take for the Joust cards to be, like, common in the metagame, but they would probably have to be, like, so swingy that they're just too volatile and people would complain about the RNG too much, I think. If Tuskar Jouster gained you, like, 14 life, at that point it's probably better than Healbot, and I would play it over it every time. But right now it's, like, it just depends. If you're playing ladder at a high level and you're trying to grind, like, 300 games or something, I'm going to lean towards consistency a lot of the time and prefer to play cards like Healbot, but yeah, it's not set in stone yet. Some of the, I think the best Joust card is probably the Beast one, the 3/2 King's Elder. Just because it goes into a Hunter deck.
Oh, sure.
Tuskar Jouster, it's like, it's not a card we're going to see a lot of because like the more aggressive Paladin decks are just, they're linear. They're going to be better right now in the metagame. So, you know, you're going to see a lot more Mysterious Challenger and Argent Squire type of aggressive lists rather than the Tuskar Jouster slower ones. So,
I mean, pretty much those two cards exactly, and Healing Wave, the Shaman one, are the only Joust cards being played, and that's because the base effect is actually reasonable and the added effect is nice. So I think the Joust cards were, for the most part, balanced around the base effect being like bad and the good effect being only slightly better. So that's why they're not seen that much right now.
Okay. Well, it's definitely great to start off with just kind of some of these general thoughts with some of the mechanics that we're seeing in TGT, but let's get into some cards. And this segment, we're going to, actually I'm introducing a new segment to Value Town, which I'm calling Gimmick or Golden. And what we're going to do, guys, is I'm going to present a card, and I'm going to have each three of these guys basically label it gimmick or golden. Gimmick being a card that's short-lived, kind of faddish, and then golden, of course, being a card that's more, you know, has more legs, will be in the metagame much, much longer. So first card we're going to do is Dreadsteed. And Dreadsteed was a card that was being talked about a lot a week ago. And guys like Crip, and I think I remember watching Tides play like some early renditions of the Dreadsteed deck. Some cool ideas. Definitely a lot of cards that really synergize with this, with the Dreadsteed. So, Trump, what do you think? Gimmick or golden?
It's gimmick.
Okay. Expound on that. So you don't ever think that it's going to ever... Some kind of deck could be built around it. That could
high level. It's possible, but it's just far too slow. I think the card that needs to be printed with it hasn't been printed yet. Like maybe someday it's printed. Maybe because Dreadsteed exists, that it'll never be printed. And I guess I'm talking about a card like Warsong Commander that'd probably be OP, but maybe not OP. No, probably OP. Anyways, I think it's just a gimmick, and you know, some people tried to make the gimmick deck work, and that's what card games are all about, trying to make the gimmick work, and then becomes a good deck like Grim Patron. For Dreadsteed, though, I don't see it happening.
All right, Raynan, golden gimmick.
Gimmick. I don't know. Warlock is like the deck that I've had probably the most experience in like 2 years tuning and building. And when I tried building a Dreadsteed deck on stream, I just kept asking myself, like, what is this going to do better than Handlock or Zoo or Midrange Void Caller thing? Like, no matter how I built it, I couldn't justify a reason to put Dreadsteed in my deck over other cards. It didn't change any matchups. It didn't, like, I don't know. I've seen like the 100% dedicated Dreadsteed decks, like the one Tides played with like Doomsayers and Sense Demons and stuff. But like, the thing about tier one decks is that if your deck has Sense Demons in it, it's not a tier one deck. Like, the good decks just play good cards almost always. So I don't think it'll ever see much play. Even if they print cards that synergize really well with it, they would have to be like Warsong level, two card combo levels of broken in order to see play, I think.
Brian?
I mean, if your definition of, you know, a gimmick golden is a card that sticks around for a while, Dreadsteed is a card that really sticks around for a while. At least once you actually get it on the board. But no, I mean, I have to agree that this is the sort of card that you have to do a lot to really make it worth spending 4 mana on a 1/1 minion. And it so far, there really isn't enough payoff to actually make it worthwhile. You know, we've seen people playing like Sacrificial Pact, and it's like, well, you know, how good is 0 mana gain 5 life anyway? Like, right. it's only okay, you know? Sure, it makes your deck get great against Jiraxxus, but it's not really, you know, not really a particularly exciting effect, even when you do have the Dreadsteed in a lot of matchups. So I agree with the other two that this is a card that needs a lot more support before it's really going to be a major metagame player.
All right. Next card to discuss. Oops, we got Gormok. Gormok the Impaler. I think we've been seeing this in more aggro decks. And actually, Raynad, you were one of the first people to really just really point out that this that you believe this card was going to be really, really powerful. So golden or gimmick?
I think it's golden. And I think right now it's not seeing much play because it's one of those cards that it's going to take like more and more tuning, sort of, the decks that it goes into. It's really at its best in slower decks, not aggressive ones. I found it to be really good in like mid-range Paladin, slower Shaman decks. In aggressive decks, it is good, things like Zoo, but yeah, it's a card that I think we'll see more and more play, and as more expansions come out especially, and there's more Haunted Creeper-type cards, I think that will be more and more common.
Brian?
Yeah, my initial impression of Gormok was that it was, you know, the combination of being a 4/4/4, which is not particularly impressive, and the difficulty in triggering it, that it was, you know, kind of questionable. But I do think this is a card that has a lot of potential. Like, the effect is super powerful. You know, I think that, for instance, Blackwing Corruptor is basically the reason you play dragon decks. And this is kind of like a 4-cost, you know, Blackwing Corruptor / Fire Elemental that even does more damage. So it's totally worth the sort of price of admission, you know, whether it's implosion or muster or whatever else you need to get together to actually make it work. So I do think this is a card that we're going to be seeing getting a lot of competitive play in the future.
I still hold by my initial thought that it's a gimmick. So I think the requirement to get it going is just too difficult. And throughout the games of Hearthstone, usually if you have four minions on the board, then you've either won or you've horribly overcommitted. And you can always trade your minions into his stuff, so you don't really need to play Gormok to deal four damage to his minion. Obviously, if you can get it to work, it's really, really strong. But then again, if you're building a deck around it, it's just one card. It's not like Blackburn Corruptor in that you can put two copies of it. So, if more cards like Haunted Creeper are printed, and I hope they aren't, because Haunted Creeper is still like on the upper tier of what should spawn more guys, then yeah, I could see it happening. But I don't think it's the lack of deck tuning, because everyone kind of knows you put Haunted Creeper in the Gormok deck, and it's good with Muster, it's good with Implosion. Mm-hmm. It's just that it's too difficult to cast still. So, I think gimmick.
Okay. Any last comments on this? All right. No. Okay. Next up, we've got, all right, Fencing Coach. So, we talked a little bit about Inspire, and you guys think that there needs to be more time to develop some more Inspire, or some more decks that will use Inspire very efficiently. And Fencing Coach was one of the cards, I know Trump in particular, you were really excited about, because you thought this was essential to a lot of, or at least some of the Inspire-based decks. What are your thoughts on it now?
Yeah, I thought this would be the card that would make Confessor Paltrus and Fizzlebang actually good cards. Turns out I was wrong on the Fizzlebang count. Fizzle Handlock just turned out to be worse than Handlock. And yeah. Maybe... And it's just, it's a bit clunky to cast. Like, it seems in theory good because you save two mana on your hero power, so it's like a 1 mana 2/2. But just because you can only play it starting on turn 3, and then you kind of actively want to hold off on your hero power, and you have to combo it in such a specific way, turns out to be an interesting card, but not really that great. Still, I'm going to... I'm not even going to call it golden. I'll call it a gimmick right now. It's like on the fence. But it's just not good enough, or the Inspire cards aren't quite powerful enough. Like, the Inspire things, yes, summoning random legendary is good, yes, drawing a card that costs zero mana is good, but even that isn't quite enough to justify putting in a Fencing Coach, I'd say.
Brian?
I mean, I have to agree with Trump on that part. I think that the combination of two things. One, I don't think that the shell for like an Inspire deck really does exist at the moment. And I think the body and cost of Fencing Coast is just so high, like, that, you know, you're paying three for a 2/2, and it's effectively saving you two mana on a future turn, mm-hmm. or maybe this turn if you really want to, you know, get a 2/2 body in play and hero power. And like, that's just a really, really high cost that already has to line up with something else that is powerful, like Confessor Paltrus. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to be getting, you know, huge value from the actual Inspire trigger in order to justify actually playing a Fencing Coach. So I think right now I would definitely say it's a gimmick. Maybe there'll be, you know, future cards that make it better, but I'm not really seeing it.
Yeah, I think Fencing Coach is a card that's at its best with the expensive Inspire cards like Coda Rider and Fizzlebang and Paltrus. And I tried a Fencing Coach, like double Coda Rider, Fizzlebang type of control warlock, and it was okay. But man, you have to just do such broken stuff to be considered like a high tier deck nowadays. Like, if I'm playing Warlock, my Fencing Coach deck has to be so good that I can justify playing it over like 4 mana 8/8s and 0 mana 8/8s, and I have to justify playing it over like Zoo. It's hard, you know. I think like if they print really expensive Inspire mechanics, like a 10 mana Inspire guy that like wins the game when you Inspire, then something like this could be good. But the Inspire effects right now just aren't swingy enough, outside of like maybe the Priest one. But at best, you're basically getting a 2-cost reduction on one of your big creatures, which is kind of the same as playing like a Dragon Consort. So I don't know. I'm going to say gimmick too, yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess a little on a tangent there, or just kind of going off of what you said there, are the decks that we've had in the past, like the Handlocked, are they just too powerful then? Like, from the standpoint of, like, should they nerf some of those so that we can introduce more things like that? Or is it going to require them just to continually chase those existing polished decks?
Well, Life Tap's always been too good. So.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's true.
Like, the Hearthstone card design philosophy is that if everything is broken, then nothing is broken. Like, most cards in Hearthstone, if you were to translate them to, like, their Magic equivalents, they would be beyond absurd. And that's kind of, like, their philosophy. So I think you'd have to nerf, like, everything for cards like Fencing Coach to be good. There's always going to be, like, very broken cards in the game, and the most broken, or the ones that line up well against other broken cards, will be the ones that see competitive play.
Okay. I mean, there's two ways of thinking about it. You could either say everything is broken, or you could say everything is balanced. So all Fencing Coach is necessary is a buff. So something like a 2-mana 2/2. I mean, that might be too powerful, but I'm just throwing it off the top of my head. Right, maybe 2-mana 1/1 or 2-mana 1/2 or something. Mm-hmm. Basically, a lot of the cards in the Grand Tournament could have been pushed a bit further to see more inclusion in these currently existing decks. And something in general, and I actually made a video on this, is that I would have liked them to push the direction of cards that don't fit current decks to make those cards a bit stronger, mm-hmm. Such as Beast Druid or like Control Shaman or Face Priest. Like, they can push cards that... They can make the stats, they can make the effect, they can make the mana cost on those cards a bit lower to make that a broken archetype as well, while not improving current decks.
I think that pushing things with relation to the Inspire mechanic is actually one of those dangerous spaces that exists, because mm-hmm. one of the things about Inspire is that it's a mechanic that if you have a card with Inspire that you are able to continue to get value out of each turn, it is this massive natural snowball effect, because it's this repeat use thing along with your hero power. And I think that hero powers are one of the things that are kind of the, you know, pillars of the development of Hearthstone. We just talked about, you know, how powerful and game defining Life Tap is. And, you know, if you have all these things which, you know, just basically create the same sort of game state over and over because you're able to use these repeatable Inspire things, it's just a dangerous place for things to be good. That's basically what I'm going for here.
Okay. Let's move on to the next card here, which is the Priest legendary card, Confessor Paltrus. And I've been seeing this card in some Priest decks, mostly Control Priest decks, not the Dragon Priest decks. But what do you guys think?
Reyna. That's pretty good. Mm-hmm. I think that Confessor Paltrus is like, I don't know, at first I thought it would be too slow, but then I realized that after you actually like play with Priest, almost every game you're never like rushing people down. You're never having a combo finish. Every single game you're trying to drag out. So you usually want like one big dude in your deck. You know, in the start of Hearthstone, that was Ragnaros for a long time because of the lack of good Priest removal. I think that Confessor Paltrus is like probably the best option now. I don't like cards like Ysera or Nefarian or something, because any card in a Priest deck that costs more than 8 essentially says like pay 2 life to play it. It's a really high opportunity cost to not be able to hero power, but with this card, like as a 9-drop, being able to heal for 2 in the late game is actually a big deal. A lot of the time, that's like 15% of your life total or something at that point, or 20%, and it's the difference between dying and not dying. And the effect is really strong because it actually almost always gives you 2 threats that end the game. You know, if you summon like a KT, it's not like they can just, or if you summon like Rag, it's not like they can let the Confessor live. So almost always it's like a lightning rod for the removal, which protects the other legendary you got. And I actually think it's pretty strong, mostly because you can hero power yourself the same turn you play it.
Yeah, what you get from Confessors is generally going to be good. I mean, you have a high percent chance of getting something better. I mean, just the, I think it's a 4-mana and up, right? You have like, I think it was a 60% chance of getting like a legend that's, you know, in that range. So it's value wise, it's amazing. Brian, what do you think?
Interestingly, like the summon a random legendary got worse with this set, because there's actually significantly more lower cost legendaries like the Bane Sisters and Gormok and things like that.
Yep.
But I do think this card is very strong. I think that for like a control style of Priest deck, it's exactly the kind of card that you want to basically like be able to actually close out games. And one of the problems that sometimes Priest decks can suffer from playing against other control decks is that you actually just kind of, because your hero power doesn't actually generate any sort of value, like against like Paladin or against Control Warrior, where that, you know, you're dealing with a ton of removal, you can pretty easily run out of threats. You know, that's one of the reasons that I think that Mind Control and Thought Steal were like really popular cards in Control Priest for a long time. Even though I don't think either of them is great, it's not particularly efficient at what you want to be doing in many cases. But Paletris, you know, being able to present not only like two threats that have to be dealt with, but one of them that has to be dealt with right now in the late game against other control decks is just really, really powerful. And if you can protect it with like Sludge Belchers or whatever else and get a second activation, it's almost unbeatable.
Yeah, I think that's true enough. I actually really liked what Raynette had to say about the Paletris. It's true that the opportunity cost of playing against Sarah is pretty high, the two life, but still, Confessor Paletris isn't popular right now, or isn't even being played. I actually have not had Paletris played against me so far.
Being played a lot, actually. All the top five priest lists, which there are a lot of on Asia-China servers right now, all play Paletris, every single one.
Most of the priest decks that I see now are Dragon Priest decks, and you can only afford to have so many high-cost cards in your deck, and the Dragon decks generally have dragons in those slots. But yeah. I this is like the win condition that I want to be playing in my sort of non-Dragon Control Priest shells.
I didn't mean to cut you off, Trump, sorry. I just like all the Dragon Priest lists right now, like as of a couple days ago, that are top five ranked, they all cut Ysera for this thing. Every single one.
That's a big surprise to me, considering how Ysera is both a big threat and a dragon. Well, I mean, I was going to say, despite that, I do think it is a really good option for Control Priests, and probably for especially non-Dragon Control Priests. I feel like Dragon Control Priests would just run Ysera, but hey, maybe I missed the boat on this one. So, that's cool. I look forward to seeing how it works.
It's definitely a fun card for just to see what comes out of Paletris each time, you know. So it'll be cool to see it more in competitive play. All right, next up we got Chill Maw, which, speaking of dragon, this card's been in many of the dragon decks, and wanted to see what you guys think. Brian, you want to start off?
Chill Maw's great. I crafted a golden Chill Maw like day one, and then opened another one yesterday.
Why doesn't that surprise me, actually?
It's a sign. No, I actually think Chill Maw's very, very good. I kind of had some doubts as to how good it was at actually, in a lot of matchups, defending you from, you know, your opponent being able to kill you, because, you know, it's a big taunt. But it's been very, very effective. One of the things that's very powerful about Chill Maw is it can actually stop the giant burst lethal kills from patron decks. Toward the end game, you know, if you're at a sufficient life total, your opponent needs to get like a frothing and, you know, multiple whirlwind effects off. And if you're able to play Chill Maw, they have to, you know, actually get through the Chill Maw, which means that they can't patron or can't frothing and whirlwind, or else their frothing dies. So it also actually can defend you against Force Roar, because it can kill all of the stuff that comes out of Force of Nature as well. So it's been very, very effective in my gameplay with it. It's also just a dragon, so that makes it inherently more sweet.
Trump.
Yeah, I actually didn't think much about the card at first. Just because I figured, you know, you can just execute or something first. But it turns out that in order to get the one damage on, you usually need to start with, like, getting the patrons out or whatnot. Or, I think it's generally okay. I don't think it's amazing, but, yeah, we can put it in the good category.
All right, cool.
I think that, like, Chilma's not particularly impressive at what it does, but like the difference between 7, 8, and 9 mana is so high that any defensive effect they happen to put on this would make it an auto include in just about every single dragon deck. So like building dragon deck is like, okay, I put in my 4 mana 3/6s, I put in Chill Maw, I put in Corruptors, Technicians, all this stuff, and if I'm Warlock, I play Twilight Drake. If I'm like Priest, I play Whelp and Wormrest Agent. It's like, it's pretty simple deck building more or less, and Chill Maw's kind of an auto include in all of those decks. Which is not to say that it's bad. It's definitely like a good effect, but I feel like a 7-mana dragon that with like reasonable stats could have done almost anything and have been included, especially if it's defensive. If it just had like taunt and did something,
I just noticed something that wasn't on this list, and I'd like to go to it next. Speaking of 7-mana cards that are auto includes in decks, which are control. Well, let's talk about Eodric the Pure. You go first, Raynette.
Yeah, it's a good card. I've definitely lost games to it. Very strong against every dragon deck. Good against Handlock. Good against pretty much anything that's playing a fair game. And the like, it's the same thing as Tuskar Jouster. Like, the best Paladin deck, best right now, is Mysterious Challenger. So you're not going to see Murloc Knight, as absurd as that card is. You're not going to see Adric. You're not going to see... Half the Paladin decks you play against don't see Tyrion, and nobody's going to call Tyrion a bad card. So I think that not seeing Adric right now is a ridiculous argument for calling the card bad, because you're not going to see anything but Mysterious Challenger. Because why would you play anything but the best version of the class if you're your average scumbag ladder player?
Okay. Yeah, I actually think, like, I think it's very important. A lot of people in the Hearthstone community seem to have this notion that if a card isn't seeing, like, play in any particular given metagame, that it's a bad card. And that's just kind of outrageous. Like, there are certain cards that in the appropriate context are, like, super powerful, but don't necessarily exist in that context in the current metagame. Like, I think that one of the best examples is Rend. I have a particular affinity for Rend that I people who watch my stream know. But I think that card is outrageously powerful, but it's just a matter of context. Like, yep. If you're playing in a metagame that has a lot of Control Warrior and, you know, other sort of late game legendary laden decks, like, you know, Druid or whatever else, even against, like, Freeze Mage, like, it's a very, very powerful card. But if the format is a bunch of Hunter decks and a bunch of Secret Paladin decks, it's like, yeah, that's just not a good card. So, you know, it's important to recognize the quality of any card in Hearthstone is very contextual, and a card can be very, very good and still see absolutely no play because of the state of the metagame.
That's a good point.
Well said.
Trump, so you brought up Adric, so what are your thoughts on it?
My thoughts on it are actually completely opposite. I don't think it's a good card even in a control metagame. I think that if it were a better card, then it would push the control paladin to be a bigger presence. Well, I can appreciate the thought of there are some cards that are good which aren't being played just because of the metagame. Like, I can understand that, because suppose, let's say, that the metagame were all, like, the Secret Paladin and Hunters, then even though Handlock is a pretty good deck, you might not play it, because 4-mana 8-8s just aren't good enough. You play the 4-mana 8-8, you die on turn 5. That said, though, I think that the card itself, yeah, you can only put in one copy, but it is just too slow still, and the stats are too weak, and just because there will always be some percentage of aggressive-ish decks, it's not going to find a spot.
Yeah, that sums it up pretty well. I was hoping we could have some more Kodo targets after using Adric, but yeah, it's way, way too slow. All right, next up we got Aviana. All right, let me bring up Aviana real quick. This is the Druid card that some people have been experimenting with in Ramp Druids, if they're not playing the mid-range Druid or the token Druid these days. What do you think about this card? Trump, you want to start off?
Sure. I saw Savitz playing an Astral Communion deck on stream. Yes. It was pretty fun. Yeah. It was really bad, as it turns out. And he actually put Aviana in the deck, which I disagreed with, because if you're going to Astral Communion, then you probably don't want Aviana anyways. Aviana had, like, a few possibilities, and there's a cool design. I do like the card being printed. It shows a little bit of risk-taking from Blizzard's side, and someday, like, some combo will come up. In fact, right now, it's already possible. You do Aviana, Malagos, Faceless, mm-hmm. Innervate, Moonfire. That's apparently the kill combo right now, but it's just not consistent sick. Enough. It's wow. No good. Aviana right now is just pure gimmick, and I can't really see in the future how it would not be a gimmick, but I guess it would become good if something better than Malagos Faceless came up with a combo with Aviana and Innervate.
Maybe. Wow, that'd be crazy amazing. Brian?
I've said from the start that I think Aviana is definitely a gimmick. The card doesn't do that much until you already have enough mana to be playing all of these cards. Mm-hmm. And at that point, it's like, okay, well, you could have just played these in previous turns rather than, you know, because you need to have Aviana and then, you know, a card that is worth discounting that you couldn't have already just played. It's, you know, like, I just don't see it. I can see maybe if there's more, like, huge like battle cry type effects that you can maybe pair it with, that like, you know, you can build like an enormous board in one turn, or perhaps the metagame is such that like, you know, there's lots of really spot removal heavy decks and not sweeper heavy decks that maybe this is okay, but it's going to be a weird world where that's a card that I would want to play.
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much agree. It's just bad.
All right. Okay, next up, so that one's definitely a gimmick, I think, from all of you guys. Next one, we've got Ronin. This is a card that a lot of people were talking about, just maybe, I don't know, maybe replacing Dr. Boom initially, or you're just pairing up with the Archmage just because of the missiles being so cheap. What do you guys think of this?
So I've seen Ronin be good pretty much exactly once, and that was when my opponent got it off of Deathlord and then immediately played Antonitis. I lost that game. But it's, I mean, the problem with Ronin is that you're paying so much for the upfront body that, like, and Arcane Missiles isn't that good unless you're already comboing it with something else. You know, you either have to have, like, Malagos or Antonitis or whatever else in order to make this Death Rattle really worth a lot. And, you know, paying 8 for a 7-7 just isn't something I feel is particularly effective in the metagame. Like, maybe there's, like, some sort of, you know, Flame Waker deck, like, you know, that really wants this effect that, like, can't do better. The problem is that, like, is this better than just Ragnaros? Is this just better than Dr. Boom, Antonitis? Like, you only have so many spots in a deck that is going to take advantage of this Death Rattle to begin with for big minions. And there's a lot of competition, and I think Ronin falls short.
Yeah, I think in my set review I said that, like, I'm pretty sure I'd rather play War Golem in almost every deck over this card. Like,
wow.
I stand by that. There's a big difference between 7 and 8 mana. And the reason you don't play War Golem is not Big Game Hunter or anything. It's because you play it and then you get killed the next turn. Like, you're just dead. So I'm willing to play like Dr. Boom without the Boom Bots over this card, because I think that's just... That's how important it is to do something turn 7 over turn 8.
Okay, wow, that's a strong
statement.
That's
pure madness.
That's a strong statement right there.
All right, I still hold by that this card is actually pretty good, and I would expect to see it in more control mages. I think the deck is, like, there someday. Certainly you never replace Dr. Boom with it. It replaced Dr. Boom.
Right.
But
right.
You would play it along Dr. Boom and Archmage Antonitis and Ronin, and... Like, I think it's still a consideration to be included in Tempo Mage. You actually just keep going. You win the late game with the Archmage and the Ronin. I still think it's great.
Okay, a little bit split there on that card. Next up, we've got, all right, this card, Varian Wrynn, which I know heard some different opinions on this in the community and actually amongst you guys too. So Varian Wrynn is a card that I think a lot of people thought was just going to be ridiculously good when first announced, like broken good. But I think there's been some, you know, people thinking it's not so much broken now, or even in that realm of classification. So Raynad, why don't you start off with it?
Pretty sure in my review I said this card was bad.
Yeah.
Because you can't hero power. Like that's that's the difference between 8 and 9 mana. It costs you a hero power. That's like an absurdly high cost for a slow deck. I have to just start off by saying like a 10 mana card is purely unplayable against every single aggressive deck in the metagame. So it's like I don't know. Like it's a cool card. It's such a cool effect and it's so flashy when you read it. But then you actually think about like what do I cut for this? Because you don't want to play too many big guys, right? You don't want to play an additional big creature so that this is pulling 8 drops out of your deck for you. Not really. You want to... If you're playing a card that costs 10 mana, it better be, like, one of the only late-game cards in your deck. Because, like, a Deathwing should be, like, all you need, or a Ysera should be all you need to win a control mirror. You don't need, like, 10 of these cards. So, I don't know. A lot of times you're paying 10 mana for a 7-7 that's going to like draw you 2 cards and put an Acolyte of Pain into play. Even if it puts something big into play, like if you're against aggro, you're dead the next turn. It's just costing you a hero power late in the game means that you're missing out on maybe like 20% of your life total. A lot of times you'll be at like 10 or something, and a hero power adds like 20% to your life total. So I don't know. I think that the opportunity cost of not hero powering is really high, and I think that if I'm going to play big minions in my deck, I only want a couple, and I think like the best warrior finisher in TGT was Gorehowl. because of Justicar Trueheart. I don't think that this is something it's ever going to see much play because it's just too expensive.
Would you rather play War Golem?
That's a good question.
It's close. I'd probably rather play Varian because, like, War Golem and Varian are both terrible against aggro, but Varian can win control mirrors. Unless they're going to fatigue, then he's a drawback. So, I don't know. He's actually bad in warrior mirrors. That's the funny thing. If you pull too many dudes off of it, you get brawled because they all play two brawl, and it's a card that's usually a brick. But then if you just draw three cards, then you're fatiguing first. So it's like lose-lose, you know? Plus, it usually costs you four life because you're going to play Justicar in your warrior deck, right? So that's a big deal. You're losing four life to play this. I don't know. I'm not a fan.
Trump?
I think everything I heard was just pure madness there. Varian Ridge is still one of the best cards and is actually a decent reason to play Control Warrior right now. It was kind of I have to admit that after having played Varian Ridge a good amount of times, my expectation of him has gone down. And also, last season, one of the top Control Warrior players did not include VLPS did not include Varian Rin because precisely of Raynant's point, if you get to turn 10, you're not going to be able to play it against, well, basically you're not going to get to turn 10 against aggro decks. The game is decided before then, and against certain decks, like even the Control Warrior Mirror, it's not good because you overextend onto the board, you fatigue faster. But I think despite that, Varian Rin is actually still very good, just because, and I don't put as much stock in something like 7 mana versus 10 mana. I think most of the reason why 7 mana versus 10 mana matters is because you can play the 7 mana card on turn 7. Not that you can play it on turn 9 and hero power. But Varian Rin, it's very much like an Ancient of Lore. You actually just win the control matchup with it. Having played Control Warrior for a very long time, I've always been so jelly of the druids with Ancient of Lore, but now we've got Varian Rin, and couldn't be happier. It is a very flashy effect, and it is very powerful. I don't think you... yes, you do need to cut a card for it, and it's pretty difficult in Control Warrior, and I don't think you cut a big card for it. I think you just get bigger, and you win more control matchups, and yes, you lose slightly more aggro matchups, but you can balance your deck a bit to hold that off, perhaps.
Okay, Brian, they're split on that one. How about you?
I think the card is very powerful. It's another card that I think is contextual. Like, I think this is a card that you want in your deck if you expect to play against a significant number of other control decks. If you think that the metagame is very fast and you're going to play against primarily aggressive decks, probably don't want a 10-mana card in your deck, unless it is gaining you a million life or something like that. But I do think that one of the things about Varian that is unlike a lot of other cards is it can present sort of an insurmountable board state with a single turn. Like, I've been unbelievably ahead playing, like, say, you know, Control Mage or Control Priest against Control Warrior, and then my opponent plays Varian, and suddenly they have like, 20 power in play, and I went from a board state where I couldn't possibly lose to one that I couldn't possibly win. And... you know, that's something that no other card in the game does right now, and I think that's a really big deal. It's not just that it's providing you with a bunch of value, it's that it's providing you with value that can sometimes generate into this enormous board presence.
Is that a good thing?
That's a very good thing. I mean, okay. It's obviously not necessarily against decks that have tremendous sweeper capabilities, like Double Brawl, like Raynad was talking about. In those cases, that can actually be somewhat detrimental. But there are other matchups where, like, you know, getting, say, Varian plus Ysera plus Sylvanas in play, it's like now your opponent suddenly can't possibly win.
I think I would just rather play Ysera than this. I think, like, what control decks is this beating? Priest is going to light bomb you because they're not going to use it earlier in the game against a slow warrior deck. Yeah. Slow paladin is going to equality you. Warrior is going to brawl you. Every control deck has large sweepers that they're not going to be using earlier in the game against your deck if it's a control mirror because they're just not going to have, like, uses for it. And it's just, like, gives them a way to use it. I don't know. In practice, I think people will play it, but then, like, you'll start seeing less and less of it to a point where, like, people will say, oh, I cut it because there's too much Hunter on ladder or whatever, but that's not the reason. There's always going to be Hunter on ladder. It's just, they're just going to cut it because it's bad, I think.
I don't think that's a real argument of putting it in instead of Ysera. In fact, it's great with Ysera because you pull out the Ysera and then you win in the control mirror.
anytime I'm in a control mirror, I don't know, man. I'm never like, man, I wish I had a second Ysera in my deck. That would be great right now. Like, how many big cards can you
play? I've definitely thought that.
Yeah, I mean, if you're playing the control
mirror, maybe I'll just play Chromagus. You want to have a second Ysera.
That's right. Okay, well, all right, split on that one. I think that kind of concludes, I guess, the segment where we're doing Gimmick or Golden. So generally, I just want to ask you guys, I guess, what cards have surprised you the most so far, since we're talking about cards?
I mean, I think that's probably the same for all of us, the Mysterious Challenger.
Yeah.
Like, coming in, I was like, my evaluation of Mysterious Challenger, you know, when I wrote my review, was that I thought that it was most likely to have an impact on games when it got, you know, unstable portaled out by a mage. But turns out that it is a powerful enough effect that it's worth putting a bunch of garbage in your deck.
Yeah, my impression was that putting a bunch of garbage in your deck was too high of a cost to include the card in your deck, because the best decks usually don't play garbage. But like, the metagame is sped up so much that something like Noble Sacrifice is almost playable, and I don't know. I still think that as the other Paladin decks get more refined, I still feel like Secret Paladin might be a bit overrated, but as far as it's just like matchups across the board go, it's very good against the old decks right now. So I think as that starts to shift and more like TGT based decks start coming out, I think we're probably going to see a fall off in this kind of strategy, but it's definitely like a really strong effect for sure.
So was that the card that surprised you the most too, Reyna?
I guess. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. Yeah, I mean, that's probably it. Refreshment Vendor kind of surprised me. That guy's been harder to fit into stuff than I thought. Like, that card looked really, really, really good to me. But then it has like the same problem that all of those cards for control decks do, which is that the only comeback mechanic, because of the structure of Hearthstone, is to burst your opponent for 14. So the fact that like any Refreshment Vendor deck is going to be a deck without burst makes it already tier 2, and that's a big issue, I think. So,
yeah. Trump? Okay. Surprising card?
Yeah, of course, that's number one, but I will add a number two anyways. I think the card that I'm surprised at not being a deck yet is Lock and Load. I think that it still has a chance, and I kind of understand how Lock and Load didn't actually become a deck, because a lot of people have kind of compared it to, you put it in a mid-range hunter, and then it's just the worst mid-range hunter because you put in all the bad cards and then your Lock and Load draws sometimes. But actually, it had pretty high expectations from it, because I thought the spells in the hunters were good enough, and you know, you get the coins sometimes. And I actually still hold out a bit of hope. I've seen a little bit of the play at Legend of Lock and Load, but I think that's one of the decks that has potential, but I'm surprised that it's not there yet.
Lock and Load is definitely a very powerful card. I mean, one of the problems is that so many of the other Hunter cards are really powerful, but don't want you to go the same direction as Lock and Load at all. Like, the Hunter Hero Power is just not very good for a deck that's trying to play to this late game advantage. It's very good at closing out games quickly. And I think that in order for any card that goes against the class's sort of natural inclination, thanks to its hero power, like, that card and all the support surrounding it has to be so much better than the other cards, and I don't really think that Lock and Load is there yet.
Yeah, I think that it's one of those cards that's, it's like so powerful it was either going to be completely too dominant, or it was going to be just worse than Midrange Hunter when it's first released, but every single cheap spell for the rest of the existence of Hearthstone that comes out for Hunter, that card gets better and better. And that's a pretty broad spectrum, cheap Hunter spells. That's going to be most Hunter spells. So every single expansion, that card gets so much better, to the point where there might be a critical mass eventually. And it's not just the Hunter spells, but the neutral spells that get printed, like Clockwork Gnome and Mechanical Yeti. Mm-hmm. So as more of those kinds of things come out, I think it also improves a lot.
All right, favorite cards. So not necessarily most surprising, but what's your favorite card, Trunk?
Oh, I guess I could have included this in the previous category as well, but my favorite card is Murloc Knight. It is pure value, and I've always liked playing mid-range Paladin. So Murloc Knight was surprisingly good. Like, the first day of TGT, I was like, I'm going to put in one of those 3-3 Regents, I believe.
Yeah.
Which summons a 1/1. It's going to be about the same as the Murloc Knight. I'm going to put in one Murloc Knight. We're going to kind of duel each other and then see which one comes out on top. And the Murloc Knight kept doing absurd things over and over again. So I put in a second copy of Murloc Knight and even took out like a Sylvanas for it just because it was kind of the sixth slot. And it is really good and fits in my favorite deck. And I love pressing the hero power. So Murloc Knight. All right.
Brian?
I mean, to the surprise of absolutely no one, it's Twilight Guardian. I mean, I've been trying to make dragon decks work since before Blackrock Mountain, actually. But really, with Blackrock Mountain, you know, I felt like the key component of dragon decks that was missing was an actual dragon that helped you bridge from the mid to the late game. Every dragon in the game prior to Twilight Guardian was, you know, this late game focused or otherwise, you know, not defensive minion. And Twilight Guardian is the perfect card for those decks. It is, you know, a minion that helps bridge you to the late game. It's just this powerful defensive minion, and it's also a dragon that helps enable all of your other dragon synergy cards. So that really basically made every dragon deck possible.
Huh? Yeah, Raina.
What are we naming our favorite card?
Yeah, favorite. Yeah.
It's tough to say. I guess I'm not a big priest fan. I mean, I like every class, but priest is far from my favorite. But I guess I would say Wormrest Agent, because there are definitely times when I want to, like, stream and play something different, and I'll mess around with Priest for, like, 6 to 8 hours or something on a day, and I'll just end up yelling at my monitor every time at Blizzard, because why is it that three expansions in, one of your classes has no two-drop? Like, it's beyond, like, it angers me on so many levels. It's not even for balancing reasons, right? It's not like Priest would be too good. Priest would just be, like, almost playable if it had a two-drop. So, like, the fact that you're forced to play Dragon Priest because it's the only version with a two drop. When I play Wormrest Agent, it's so satisfying because it makes me feel like I'm playing with the Death Knight class. It's like this whole new class has entered the game where I can now play Hearthstone with this Anduin character, and it's enjoyable for me. Like 2/4 taunt for two is awesome stats. I love it. I don't know why it's the only one in the game, but it's fine. Like it opens up a whole new class that I wasn't playing much of before, and it's completely because of that card. The 4-mana 3/6 is super important for sure, but like the 2-drop is like why Priest is playable right. Sometimes with that card.
One of my biggest gripes with Priest, and Priest has been actually my favorite class in Hearthstone for a long time, has been that it couldn't do anything powerful and proactive, that so many of its cards were just fundamentally reactive, and it didn't have anything good to play on too. You know, they had like Shrinkmeister, which has bad stats for Priest. Like if Shrinkmeister were a 2/3, that card would be unbelievably good, but like as a 3/2, it's just not really a 2-drop for a class that wants to be defensive and has a hero power that wants high health minions. And yeah, Wormrest Agent is so good in that deck. But I definitely agree that it has made me want to play Priest again, which is has not been the case for a long time.
All right. Well, I think we're going to conclude our card section there and move on to the decks. We've actually talked a little bit about some of the decks we'll be discussing here. So we're going to start off with the Secrets deck, of course, the Paladin deck. And we've already alluded to how powerful it is, and in the meta report, I know Tempeststorm's meta report, it's been number one since forever now, since TGT came out. Let me pull it up real quick. Where is it? All right, there we go. And kind of have the Mysterious Challenger next to it as well, so we can just look at the, you know, obviously the most powerful card in the deck. So two variations here. That one's a little bit more the aggro variation, while the other is more the mid-range and has some of the later cards like Tyrion and Dr. Boom. So let's talk about the deck. Let's just talk about why it's so powerful. Raina, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, well, it's just a proactive linear strategy. It plays a lot of good cards, a good curve. So early in a metagame when people are playing experimental stuff, just having like a proactive, consistent game plan is going to perform very well. On top of that, it introduces like 5 cards to the game that for 2 years nobody has played against. So every single time you play Mysterious Challenger, your opponent's inevitably going to attack, which is going to make the Noble Sacrifice, Avenge, bring back your 2/1 thing happen. And like all of a sudden you're grossly far behind on the board, and it's just when you naturally draw the secrets, they're secrets that people aren't used to playing against yet, because, you know, they hadn't seen playing constructed up to this point. So, like, because of all those reasons, the deck is positioned really well right now. And, you know, Mysterious Challenger is definitely, like, super powerful anytime you play it. It just feels like the best six drop in the game. Like, it feels better than playing Emperor most of the time. And it's, yeah, I mean, it's just a good deck overall. And it remains to be seen if it sticks around for a long time or if the matchups kind of shift to the point where it's weaker and the people get better at playing around secrets and stuff. Like,
Trump?
To some extent, this is a surprise. So I'm going to, I guess, start with why it's a surprise. It's not a surprise that this is doing well, because Face Paladin was a really good deck. And this is basically, basically Face Paladin, except with some worse draws sometimes, and then sometimes you get the Mysterious Challenger and you don't draw the secrets, and you have a really, really good six drop. But one of the reasons why this is a surprise, as why it's rated the number one deck, is because of the lack of Patron Warrior around. And you would think that, like, right now, I think this deck is just all the rage, and Dragon Priest is also pretty popular. If you want to win, I think you just play Patron Warrior right now. But for some reason, there seems to have been, like, a ceasefire of Patron. Like, everyone's just kind of agreed, all right, we've had enough Patron. It's not that Patron is even a bad deck. It's actually one of the strongest it's ever been, just because of the this deck and the Priest deck being around. But it's just people aren't playing it, probably because they're tired of it, they want to try the new stuff. This deck could get knocked down if Patron ever becomes popular again on ladder, and it will someday, I'm sure. As for this deck, I don't think it's a surprise that it's good. It's just Face Paladin, except with, like, an extra hat trick, literally.
Brian?
I mean, I think this deck is very powerful. I agree with Trump that a lot of its sort of prominence is due to it being new, and people, you know, who had, you know, played hundreds and thousands of games of Patron Warrior over the past few months just wanted to do something different. You always see new strategies sort of overrepresented at the beginning of a new set's existence, and I mean, that's one of the reasons that sort of powerful linear aggressive decks too, like Raynad was saying, tend to be very effective, because people are still tuning these things. They still have these new ideas they're exploring that aren't fully realized yet. So I think that this deck is not as good as people are suggesting it is, both because I don't think it's actually that powerful, and because I think that it's a lot of it is being sort of colored by, as Trump was saying, the lack of Patron Warrior decks, and also just people's inexperience playing against it. Like, my success rate against the Secret Warrior deck in the past, like, 7 days has shifted dramatically, because I just, like, figured out how to play against it, you know? They're, like, when you, like Renad was saying, it's like, yeah, people will just, like, okay, I'll attack. It's like, oh, wait, no, I know what happens in these situations because I've been here and figured it out before. So, you know, you just play against it differently, and you can end up winning a lot more than if you're just like, oh, I guess I'll attack your guy. Oops, now I'm dead.
Right. Actually, when you attack efficiently, it's not that great for them a lot of times. Yeah. Depending on...
Well, in many cases, you just don't attack, and it's actually better.
Yeah, that's true. Right? That's another thing, too.
It's like, yeah, like, you attack, and it's like, oops, it was Avenge. Now I can't stop that minion. I'm dead. And when it's like, okay, well, I'll just give up 2 damage in the possibility of this Avenge, and I won't give you a buffed minion. And, you know, now I can wait until I have the resources to deal with that, and suddenly the game is totally different now that I understand what I'm up against.
I think a big part of the issue is, like, I see a lot of Reddit posts and stuff where people complain about Patron, for example, because of, like, they see the once in a while high level game where, you know, the double frothing berserker kills somebody from a ridiculous life total. But when you actually, I think Blizzard mentioned this or somebody, Patron's actual win rate on ladder, it's like one of the most terribly performing decks across all ranks. It's like sub 40% or something for its win rate.
Wow.
And that's okay. Because the only time Patron is the best deck in the game is when you're like, an upper half legend player that's put hundreds of games into the deck, because it's really hard to play. Whereas something like Mysterious Challenger Paladin, it's a Leper Gnome deck. Anybody can smash their face against a keyboard and, like, I don't know, click on stuff, and they'll win games with this. But with a Patron deck, when they're, like, playing Frothing Berserker on curve and wondering why they're losing, you know, it's just never going to be as popular, because it's more difficult to win with, I think. So that's a big part of why decks like this will always be overrepresented. compared to something like Patron, which is objectively better if everyone plays perfectly, but in the real world, it doesn't happen. So
between the two of these, just the more aggro version, which do you like better?
The slow one's better, I think. It's a lot better.
Yeah, I have been more impressed by the versions that aren't quite as all in, like that have, you know, the follow up, whether it's Boom, Tyrion, or like I've seen some with even like Shredders or even Murloc Knights, you know, kind of attacking from all angles, that, you know, you have this tempo game that you can play with your secrets and your early drops. And then you have, you know, this sort of value slash power late game that you also have access to.
I actually think both are legitimate. I think the face... I actually just think both are good. The face spell... And it's cool because there are two versions. It's kind of like two new decks have spun. There's the aggro challenger paladin. There's the non-aggro mid-range challenger paladin. But they have two different flavors. I think the... I like the face one more, but they... are both good, and they just have different win rates against the field.
Okay, yeah, so if you're just starting out and want to play a deck that's not too expensive either, that's the nice thing about this deck for a lot of folks, is that you could craft it for a reasonable price. The Riddler, or what's the official name for this? Is it the Riddler Paladin or Christmas
like
Tree Paladin?
Name. I don't know where it's
Secret Paladin. Yeah, exactly. But whatever, the Secret Paladin. Okay,
Riddler is really good, I think.
Riddler, you like the Riddler Paladin? Okay. All right, so next deck we're going to discuss is we're going to jump to the Shaman deck. And this one's one that I saw Strifecrow playing, maybe about five days ago, and I thought it was kind of interesting. We haven't talked much about Shaman, actually, so far today. So what do you guys think about the whole Totem Shaman build? Powerful? Will it reach the top here?
I do think it's hilarious that we've finally reached the point where people are unironically playing Totemic Might. but I mean, I think that it sort of suffers from many of the same things that Shaman has historically suffered from, which is a lot of reliance on random elements, whether it's from the Hero Power or Lightning Storm or, you know, now Tuskar Totemic. And, you know, just a very difficult time ever sort of catching up if it falls behind, which is particularly true of the totem-based ones, because once you actually are like really heavily invested in all these totems, you have to be able to protect them, and if you can't, your entire strategy falls apart.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's just underpowered when it comes down to it. There's nothing it does that's degenerate or unfair. It's a mid-range deck with lower power level cards than something like Paladin. As good as Totem Golem is, it's not enough. It's probably an objectively worse card than Muster for Battle. And, like, it just needed better cards, honestly. Like, it's great that it got Tuskar Totemic, and it's great that it got Totem Golem, but it needed, like, four of those instead of two to become a really high-tier deck. Thunderbluff Valiant's a good card, but it's not, like, changing your matchups or anything. But if it got, like, a good... I wanted, like, Totem Bro, one mana, 2/2 Totem. Like, that would have been... card that
totem bro.
All right,
you play him, and then
good
you attack two, and you point out Totem Golem, you follow it up with Totem Bro. I don't know what you'd call it. I didn't play World of Warcraft, but
Totem. It's probably Totem Bro. I think that's canon.
Trump,
this is one of the decks that got the most stuff. Like, you can actually see from this list, it has six cards: Totem Golem, Totemic, Tuskar, and the Thunderbluff Valiant. And I was like, oh yeah, this is going to be pretty good. It was the first deck I tried out. But I actually ultimately came to the same conclusion that it's basically a mid-range Paladin, except worse. Mm-hmm. So it obviously does a few things better. Hex is really good. Lightning Storm is debatably better than Consecration. It's really close. And but it's just overall, the Paladin stuff is just slightly better. The cards are of higher quality, and they both try to do the same thing, so therefore if one is usually better, then you would usually run the Paladin one instead.
I also think that the popularity of Paladin is particularly bad for Shaman. Like, the Paladin decks, I think, match up very, very well against the Totem Shaman decks, because they do have the ability to generate early board presence that's generally higher quality. Muster for Battle is a really difficult card for Shaman decks to deal with. Their only good answer to it is Lightning Storm, which is horrifically inefficient. So I think that maybe if the metagame did shift away from Paladin being quite as popular, that maybe, you know, there's place for the Totem Shaman decks to grow into. I do think that Thunder of Bluff Valiant is actually maybe the most powerful new card. Like, Totem Golem and Tuckar Totemic are, like, these, you know, nice early plays that were among the things that Shaman lacked. But Thunder of Bluff Valiant can just kill your opponent incredibly quickly. You can have a board of, you know, absolutely nothing except for, like, you know, a couple of O2s, and in two turns your opponent dies. You know, that card generates a ton of threat very, very quickly. But I do think that this is just a deck that, like you guys are saying, it feels like a worse version of Midrange Paladin, at least in the matchups that really are popular right now.
Okay, so sad face for Shaman still, at least for the time being. Hopefully we'll see some more.
It's particularly sad, too, because Mech Shaman is way worse now, too, because there's far more aggressive decks.
Yeah,
in particular,
right.
Like Paladin, like Aggro Paladin, is like a pretty terrible matchup, you know, for Mech Shaman as well. And even like one of the best matchups for Mech Shaman, like Druid, which is popular, you know, is more popular now, it's actually even gotten worse, because both Darnassus Aspirant and Living Roots give the Druid deck more early game interaction, which was where the Mech Shaman deck really punished them before.
Mm-hmm. Any potential for a different type of Shaman deck that might emerge that you can see in the horizon, maybe?
Maybe Dragon Shaman, who knows?
Yeah, Dragon Shaman's
Dragon
not
Shaman,
bad.
Dragon Shaman, okay.
There was space for it with cards like Elemental Destruction and stuff, but they didn't push them hard enough, and they really had an opportunity to make, like, a good AoE effect for once, which Hearthstone doesn't really, like, have the best one. All the good AoEs are, like, two-card combos in Hearthstone, like Frost Nova Doomsayer or Quality Consecrate. So there was room for, like, Elemental Destruction to just not suck. But it sucked. So if it had, like, 10 less overload, that would have been space for a new Shaman deck. That was good, but...
It is actually very strange that Elemental Destruction has such a high cost and overload when you just compare it to, like, Hellfire.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
It's like, you know, or like, Shadow Flame. It's very weird to me that the best single card AoE effects are both just in Warlock, just in the same class, which also happens to be the class with the best hero power to play a control deck. So it's like, what's going on here? Why can't some other classes get some of this action?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely weird.
I actually think there's an outside chance still that Malagos Ancestors Call deck. Mm-hmm. There's been some people playing it here and there. It doesn't look like it's going to work, but there's that slight chance, I'd say.
Yeah, I saw Day 9 playing it a lot one day, and a few other folks. But yeah, that one could be interesting, or maybe an old Zeus Shaman with the spell damage or whatever could be interesting. Okay, next deck we're going to discuss is Dragon Priest, and we've talked a lot about it actually already, but I figured we'd kind of dive in a little bit as to why. And I would normally start with Brian, but since we have Raynad's Dragon deck on here, I'll have you follow up. Raynad, so why don't you explain your Dragon deck? Real quick.
I mean, I built this 30 minutes after the set went live, and it was pretty close to what I think is, like, the list I'd play now.
Yeah.
The only difference is, like, the Rend is not well positioned because of the popularity of Mysterious Challenger and Patron. I have been personally seeing a lot of Patron, even if other people haven't. So it doesn't have enough targets and enough matchups. So I replaced that with Light Bomb, which I definitely think is important. I cut the Cultists all together for, like, a second Shadowward Death and something else. I think it was, yeah, it was a second Death and, like, a Sylvanas, and then the Ysera I replaced with Confessor Palantris. So it's still a similar strategy, but yeah, that I think is really good. And yeah, I'm super impressed with it. I think Dragon Priest is very high tier. I think, like, once you go past the top two or three broken decks, it's very good, especially when you factor in the matchups. It's good against other good decks. If you're playing double Light Bomb, I think you're actually favored against Patron, which is cool. Like, I think that it's favored against Mysterious Challenger. Mm-hmm. It's just a good deck. I like it a lot. And a big part of it is that it finally has a 2-drop.
Brian?
Yeah, I mean, I think that Dragon Priest is very, very good. The biggest problem that Priest has fundamentally had through most of Hearthstone's history is this, that it has been forced to basically play reactively because it didn't have good minions, like, in the early mid game to actually apply pressure. Most of the quality cards it had were very sort of reactive and combo related, like things like Blademaster Circle or, you know, Akanai Circle or, you know, whatever else that were all these things that you have to have these interlocking pieces. They're also contingent on what your opponent is doing. And there are so many good cards against reactive cards, like very powerful Death Rattle minions, that even when those things came together, it wasn't necessarily even that good. Whereas Dragon Priest, it's like, you just play your game. You play a guy, and then you play another guy, and maybe you buff a guy, and then you heal a guy. Mm-hmm. And having these really high value minions that you can play early on really allows the Dragon Priest deck to take advantage of the class's hero power, because the Priest hero power is at its best by far when you're actually using it to establish board presence and to sort of snowball the game. Mm-hmm. And this is a deck that can do that way better than pretty much any other that I have played in Hearthstone. Like, the number of people who concede against me on, like, turn 4 or turn 5 is, like, way higher than any other deck that I've ever played.
Yeah, definitely. Right now I'm actually doing a free-to-play Priest, and I am feeling the pain of not having a 2-drop. Just those 3-2 Shrink Monsters and the 3-2 Wild Pyromancers. Sometimes you just can't get them on the board, you lose the presence, and then you find yourself struggling to catch back up. And there was a moment where Undertaker Priest was a thing, which was also a reactive or a proactive Priest deck, and that was good. And I'm glad that Priest has this new playstyle as well. I think it's quite strong.
So Brian, or Trump and Brian, are your Dragon decks pretty similar to this? What are your differences in the one that you play?
I mean, it's the versions. I've been playing a ton of different versions. I mean, I've mostly been playing Dragon, some version of Dragon Priest or Dragon Mage since TGT came out. That's, you know, the vast majority of my gameplay, and I've gone through a ton of different versions. Just yesterday, I was actually playing experimented with a version that Dark Wanix played in the EU Last Call tournament that actually had the Lightbane Darkbane sisters.
Yeah.
And Divine Spirit, yeah, to just have a bunch of these buff effects that also happen to go well with a lot of the dragon things. So there's a lot of different directions that you can take with Dragon Priest, which is one of the interesting things about it. I definitely agree with Reynad in that, you know, certain builds of the deck, like, you know, playing Light Bomb, for instance, makes you a lot stronger against, say, the Secret Paladin decks. So it's a deck that is fundamentally, like, proactive and powerful, but has a lot of spots that you can actually tune it depending on what sort of metagame you're going up against.
Okay. Trump, you? Same with you? I mean, it's pretty similar to this deck, the version you play? Or at least Raynan's version?
Yeah, for the most part. I would find myself very hard-pressed to cut Ysera, though.
I didn't cut Ysera.
Pretty much my main.
Yeah,
the card has like been so good. And, like, I kind of want to try out Paltrust now. That's been hyped so much, but like, goodness. Ysera? Oh, how do I cut her? I'd probably just add both because I like playing that heavy.
Yeah,
When I'm playing on ladder, I do like to play, you know, make the possibility of having totally, you know, powerful blowouts where I just have all these super powerful cards all at once.
Yeah, Ysera might be right. I'm not sure. I did like the math on the card because I wasn't sure about it, and in 12 games I played it once, and I died. And yeah, I don't know. So maybe that was just being results oriented. I'm not sure.
They're a particularly interesting play. Like, just having you guys played this deck so much. Any interesting play that maybe a beginner might not know right off the top that's very key to swinging the tempo or anything like that?
I mean, one of the most important things with this with this deck is that you actually will keep high cost minions in your opening hand far more often than in other decks, just because it's so important to enable your early minions. Like, I will keep Ysera in my opening hand if my other two cards are Twilight Well, Foremost Agent, because it's so important that I'm able to, you know, enable those in the early turns of the game. Even if Ysera is literally a blank card that never gets played, ensuring that I'm actually hitting my on curve, like, overpowered minions because I'm getting their battle cry effects is just worth it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's important. Like, with Velen's Chosen, don't play that until you're actually killing a minion with it. Like, don't just play it on the board. Mm-hmm. That's a really interesting card to time. Mm-hmm. If you play it too early, you walk into a silence. But if you have, like, a really good curve, sometimes you do just play it and swing it face, because otherwise you won't play it till like, turn 7. So, yeah, that's, like, one of the cards that's harder to play with. But really, it's a pretty simple deck. Like, you're not doing too many intricate things. You're just playing good dudes and good removal. And, yeah. It's like a really good arena deck.
All right. Final deck, I guess, segment or question here is, have any of you guys thought of a good rogue deck so far? Anybody? Any rogue deck that has any kind of potential?
I mean, I think that Oil Rogue is still reasonably good. Like, I don't think any of the new cards are necessarily cards that, that are going to spawn a new Rogue deck, but Oil Rogue is still a strong deck.
I feel really bad for Rogue. Like, Miracle was so fun, even though so many people hated it. And it's... Rogue is in a position now where it's a lot like the old Priest, where you have to draw a lot of these two-card combos to get ahead in a game, and sometimes they're not enough, and you're playing a lot of underpowered stuff, and it's a bit frustrating that it got an entire expansion without a single new card. Like, nothing is objectively, like, good, you know? Something like Totem Golem is just good. I'll put it in all my decks. Something like, I don't know, Darnassus Aspirant is really good. I'll put it in all my Druid decks. But, like, Druid is already in a good spot, you know? I feel like Rogue could have used a card that's just good, and... they got, like, playable stuff, you know, like another 5-drop as if you didn't have enough already, and it, yeah, I wish that the class got something just a bit better, I guess. But, the thing about Oil Rogue is, even if you don't change a single card in it, which is probably the optimal build right now, is to play zero TGT cards, the way the metagame shifted is not bad for it, because I think it's pretty good against Paladin, so...
Yeah. I did actually play against a Rogue yesterday who got Lightwell off of a Shredder, then burgled, got Holy Champion, and, like, something else that, like, basically just suddenly got a growing Holy Champion against me that, like, ultimately became, like, 12 power and killed me. After he sabotaged my Ysera. So that's basically a new card, Sabotage, right? That, I haven't seen that before. But
Burgle. The Thought Steal was too good, you know?
Burgle's fun, man. Get some really fun cards from that. Trump, any... experimentation you've done with Rogue at all?
I just echo what those two said. Plus one.
All right, cool. All right, let's just talk really briefly about metagame. Transition over to metagame, and you've seen the meta report for this week, and actually a lot of decks were added to the meta report this week, the Tempo Storm one. So curious what you guys think of the metagame right now. We talked a lot about Paladin. Paladin's obviously really, really popular, but any other classes or decks that rival it right now, or just any other classes rival the Paladin right now?
Patron's probably better.
Patron's still a better deck than the Secret Paladin deck. I think it's more powerful.
Yeah.
Paladin is certainly the deck that I'm running into the most by far on ladder. Like, looking at my stats right now, like, I've played against at least twice as much Paladin as any other class.
Wow.
Since TGT, like, and you know, most of their classes, other than Paladin, most of their classes are actually, like, fairly even. Like, haven't played against very much Rogue or Shaman, but everything else is, like, kind of in the mix, like, with Paladin by far and away the most popular.
Yeah, I think Rogue has been the least popular.
Yeah. What do you guys think of Druid?
It's good.
Yeah,
I don't know why Darnassus Aspirant is in the game, but it's good.
I think Druid got a lot better with the inclusion of Darnassus Aspirant. I think one of the biggest weaknesses of Druid for a long time was just its incredible reliance on Wild Growth, and the fact that, you know, you could very easily just draw hands that you just hero power go because, you know, you just have this really high end hand. Now it's kind of you run the risk of drawing the all mana acceleration hand, because if you're playing double Wild Growth, double Darnassus Aspirant, double Innervate, you can kind of more easily run out of gas. But I do think overall it makes the deck a lot stronger, because it's more important that you're able to actually get in the board and do something than it is that, you know, you necessarily have powerful plays throughout the game.
So I was just looking over here at Tempo Storm for the meta snapshot so I could see the metagame and become legendary. And the one thing that a lot of people are kind of curious about, certainly I'm curious about, is how Mech Mage is tier 1. Secondly, I clicked it, and I was, like, looking at the matchups here, and it seems like only 3 of them are above 50%.
So the meta snapshot, right? Every single time somebody reads it, they give criticism like that. And basically, in a nutshell, if you were to pick those decks on those tiers and play them on ladder right now, they're rated by how well you would perform. So it's not about, like, how many matchups are good. It's about, like, which matchups are the most popular and how good that deck is against the popular ones. So Paladin's really popular. Mech Mage is good against that. That's going to swing it into being a really high-tier pick for this week. That's kind of how it operates.
So Druid, you don't think is tier 1 at all?
I think it's close, but it's like it's the issue is like what's it good against? You know, it's still weak to Patron. Well, it's I personally think it's weak to Patron, and some people say it's close. Some people think Druid's favored, but it's definitely weak to Paladin. I think so. Those are like and Mech Mage, like all these decks that get on board early. Their Nasus Aspirant helps, but there's still like rough matchups. So.
Well, some versions have what Living Root and the Combatant too, right? The four draw. Yeah. What do you think of those two cards?
Combatant's better than it looks, but it's still like four health is so bad in Hearthstone. Four health is like the worst amount of health you can have besides one health. It dies to everything. It like everything. There's so few cards in the game that deal three damage. There's like Wrath and Frostbolt, and everything deals four. Shredder, True Silver, Death Bite, Abusive plus every two drop slash one drop. Like it's so easy to deal four damage. You can even deal three damage plus run like a one attack or three damage plus hero power. It just dies to everything is what I'm saying, and it's hard to like snowball game off of it unless you're playing against a deck with no like ways to interact with a 5/4, but I don't think there's any deck like that, you know.
I've actually been pretty impressed seeing Savage Combatant actually in play. It's very, very powerful when you're ahead, but it's weak when you're behind for the reasons that Raynad's talking about. In that sense, like as a Druid card, Druid, you know, in some ways it's great at getting ahead because of the acceleration, but in the games where you don't see your acceleration and you're trying to play from behind, if you have Savage Combatant in your deck instead of something like Yeti or whatever other thing you might have in, you know, in that spot, or even just, you know, some other sort of cheap removal spell like Living Roots, you'll end up being punished for it. I have actually seen a big variety of different Druid decks since TGT2. Like even in the last call tournament that I was doing commentary for last weekend, you know, there was a player who was playing a really aggressive Druid deck with like Druid of the Saber, and like, you know, we saw you know, Power of the Wilds and Violet Teachers all of a sudden again, and you know, like Living Roots not just as a removal spell but as a way to pump out early guys for pressure. And I think that Druid is finally in a spot, like, again, where it has multiple viable builds, which for a while it was basically, okay, what do you play, an Azure Drake or a Sludge Belcher? And basically every Druid deck looked the same other than that.
Yeah.
General speed of the meta right now, you guys happy with it? Too slow, too fast?
Too fast, but I think everyone will always complain too fast.
I was going to say, I think almost all the time, like, people were like, I wish I had more time to do cool stuff. You know, like in the slower on average the metagame is, the more chances you have to like get your combos together and, you know, play like wacky, fun, powerful cards like Confessor Paltris or, you know, whatever else. But I actually think that the speed of the metagame right now, it's not like blazing fast, uninteractive speed. Like I think that when, you know, decks like, say, Face Hunter are super popular, that ends up being kind of unfun because there's less things that you can do to interact with them. Like minion-based strategies like Paladin, you can at least, you know, play taunts and play things to kill their minions and stuff like that. And you know, you feel like you're playing Hearthstone as opposed to just having kill commands pointed at your face.
Yeah, I'd say the first 5 days of the Grand Tournament release is probably the most fun I've ever had playing Hearthstone. The format slowed down a lot. Everyone was playing the experimental decks, and those just turned out to be a bit slower. I don't think the format is as fast as, like, on a scale of history where format speed are taken into account, this is probably one of the slower ones, I'd like to say. Secret Paladin isn't that fast is probably my main argument. And
yeah,
you're seeing a lot of that deck, basically. And I think that can be countered.
I think that, like, the turn that deck kills you is pretty slow, but the turn that deck wins the game is very fast. Like, a lot of times, turn four, the board will be so lost to the point where it's impossible to recover even if it takes them to, like, turn nine to kill you, it still feels pretty quick. But, yeah, it probably has been faster before. Early beta, for sure. Old Blood Imp and Pyroblast.
Blood Imp, oh, man. Those were the good days.
To this day, that's the most broken card that's ever in Hearthstone, is the old Blood Imp. It's not even close.
That was just like the stealth your guys have plus one or whatever.
Yeah, plus one health.
Everything had plus one health. Yeah.
It was a one mana, one sided Thalia is what it was. Like you couldn't kill anything. Like it's actually just gross.
Yeah, all the board removal pretty much was like Druid Whirlwind and stuff like that.
Claw.
Okay, well, I think that concludes all the topics that we had today. So we're just going to go straight into some questions from you guys in the community. Those of you that already submitted your questions, I'll be picking from them. Again, it's on chainmanv.tv if you want to see just the questions that we're looking at. First off, let's go with... all right, so here's... There's been a lot of talk about RNG. There's always talk about RNG, right? Do you think RNG is any worse right now than it's been in the past? Or do you think there are some key cards that are just... that are RNG-based that are being played at a high level and is affecting competitive play a lot? Raynad. We'll start with Raynad on this one.
Where can I start, man? Knife Juggler, and probably the most egregious example is Knife Juggler. It's so it's costed in a way that you have to play it in every single aggressive deck. And actually, the strength of Knife Juggler reflects the strength of Gormok in a lot of ways because of how easy it is to generate a bunch of dudes as more and more cards get released. But anyway, so yeah, it's in every aggro deck, and based on what it juggles, you decide who wins the game, who wins tens of thousands of dollars. Animal Companion, same thing. That card has gotten less problematic because of more early game existing now, but like the difference of rolling Huffer and not Huffer still decides the game to the point where 66% of the time that card's played, one player is upset, which I don't think is a good experience.
Right.
There have been cards like that in Magic, like Invisible Stalker, that just, it's not a good experience, I think. Same thing with Juggler. Every time that card is played, one player is pissed off. That's not, I don't know. I wish it would be a 2-2. I've been saying that since before Naxxramas. But that's about it. I mean, Implosion and Unstable Portal, probably the only other two bad ones.
Yeah. Okay. Trump?
Yeah, I don't think, as much as the Grand Tournament has Joust, I think it would have been reasonable design to make them more like Tusk or Jouster, where they're aimed at beating aggressive decks, but they're costed like okay. And I think that kind of RNG is perfectly fine. When I think about the Grand Tournament, there's actually not that much. There is Ram Wrangler, which is a big deal, and if it had seen more play, that would be a really big swinging card.
Yeah.
Let's see. Other than that, it's kind of the same old. One thing worth mentioning, I suppose, is Secret Paladin has very little RNG in it, other than, of course, the aforementioned Knife Juggler. And Patron Warrior has almost no RNG, I'd say. It is a lot about just... Oh, one thing I will say is... Let's see. There have been some people who like point out certain RNG. Like, I was recently at the Gaiku tournament, and a lot of people are actually like sympathizing with me. Oh man, Trump, you lost to some horrible RNG. Like, Spellslinger got Preparation.
Oh, yeah.
Patron Warrior did so much damage to your face. But those are like the big. And I had a tough time vocalizing it, like what this was, whether or not this is a problem, and I still do. But basically, it comes down to there are a lot of small hidden plays, and what you often see and where there's a lot of outcry is when the big flashy stuff happens, but that's like so much rarer than the small plays turn by turn, the slight plays you can make better or worse, of which even in tournament play, people are making like maybe a few each game. Like, there's always slightly better plays that you can make, and that's what really decides games for the most part still. So That's good.
No, I agree with that. In tournament play, what decides who wins is mostly matchup and the plays that are made. But the RNG still, like, on cards like Knife Juggler, like, too early in the game, I feel like volatile RNG is bad.
Brian, what's acceptable RNG and not acceptable? This is a question from Zachary Tyndall, by the way.
I think that, you know, there's when you play a card game competitively, you're buying into a certain level of variance and random elements influencing the outcome of any game because you're drawing cards from a deck. Hearthstone, I think, actually needs cards that add levels of randomness to it because otherwise the game is pretty deterministic and linear because it's direct attacking and guaranteed resources and you have this hero power you can use every turn. I think if there weren't cards like Animal Companion or Knife Juggler or Implosion or Spellslinger or Unstable Portal or whatever else, that games would feel super, super similar all the time, and no one would really get excited about anything. And I do agree that, like, people will have this massive outcry over, you know, oh, he rolled Huffer again, he rolled this, he got this off of Unstable or Spellslinger or whatever, when in reality, you know, so many games are decided, you know, much more by, as the two others were saying, just people playing marginally better than others. And I think that people really undersell how many decisions there are in any given game of Hearthstone and how much of an edge players can have. Lots of people just sort of think of there are, you know, like the correct play and then misplays. And I actually hate the fact that, like, misplay is just a term that people use so often, because in so many cases, it's like there's a variety of different plays that you can make. Mm-hmm. And, you know, each of them has particular value in, you know, whatever, based on whatever, you know, various factors involved. And it's not necessarily clear cut that this is the right play, this is a misplay. You need to, you know, be considering a lot of various things that aren't necessarily even clear to most of the time spectators, commentators, whoever. So I think that like the level of randomness in Hearthstone is fine. And I think that, like, in many cases, people like who are complaining about it are just sort of undermining themselves. It's like, why should anyone, you know, like people who are like professional Hearthstone players who, you know, spend most of their time after events like complaining about how unlucky they got. It's like you're largely undermining your own sort of authority in this sense. It's like the reason people watch this is because they feel like you are some authority in this space. And if you think that all that matters is randomness, then what are you even doing here?
It's not the only thing that matters, but at a high level, like, honestly, like, how many mistakes are going to be made at a high level? I think like Trump said, it's like 2 to 3 a game. Not mistakes, but whatever, suboptimal plays. I don't know. I think cards like Animal Companion and Knife Juggler don't inspire excitement when they're played. I think cards like Unstable Portal and Spellslinger do, because they make these unique things happen that you just don't see in competitive play. So I think the cards with like a big spread where there's like 300 plus outcomes, or like even Shredder where there's like 70 outcomes or something, those cards are exciting. Those are cool. Cool things happen. Yeah, Doomsayer is frustrating, but it's like 1 out of 60. Right. It's more like the cards where, like Implosion or Knife Juggler, where like one player is upset every time. I think that's a bad experience. And it's, I don't really think hard that to I'm on the edge of my seat to see whether Leok or Huffer is rolled on turn two. I think
it's hard to pinpoint too, because a card like Brawl is also, I think, completely fine. Sometimes it leaves their biggest minion, but it's like the things where you usually have some kind of control at to the end. Like, you usually would have a plan to, like, kill the opponent's last minion if it survives from Brawl. Or, you know, you sometimes do it as a desperation play. It's hard to vocalize what makes good RNG, and you'd probably have to, like, sit down and study it a lot, or, like, just run it through, like, a test crowd or something, but it's difficult.
Well, Sanders Komen actually has kind of a follow-up to this, which is, do you think some cards should be banned in some official tournaments or maybe some unique tournaments?
Banning cards in a digital game makes absolutely no sense. Like, if you think that the card shouldn't be allowed in gameplay, you should change it or not make it in the first place. I think that if like fans want to run events, they think Animal Companion, Knife Juggler, Huffer, you know, whatever, Dr. Boom are too good, too random, whatever, you know, they can run their own events. But I think that from the perspective of Blizzard and sort of official Hearthstone organized play, it makes no sense to ban cards whatsoever.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think there was a time when we were wanting, like, a few organizers were wanting to run tournaments with a Leroy banned back when he cost 4 mana. And Blizzard was really unhappy with that because, like, to sanction events like that is saying that they acknowledge that something is wrong with their game. And outside of just Blizzard being unhappy with it, I think that, like, it's just their philosophy. They want to introduce new cards, which they've been doing pretty quickly now, and that's awesome, and just waiting for the metagame to fix itself. And in a lot of ways, it has. And I think that after 3 or 4 expansions, maybe Knife Juggler is just... maybe there's so many 2-drops that Knife Juggler just isn't good enough anymore. And I really hope that happens quickly. like, that's going to be the solution to those cards, because they're just not going to be changed, I think.
Well, I think that in some decks, you know, like card like King's Elec, you know, I think that, like, it's reasonable to argue that, like, you know, you might want to play King's Elec over Knife Juggler in you know, some Hunter decks now. Mm-hmm. I do think the fact that you know, there are lots of decks that play wide to the board and you have Unleash means that that's probably wrong right now.
Yeah.
Right. But one of the, you know, it was basically the for Knife Juggler was just the best two drop period, even if you didn't really care about its effect for a lot of decks. So it was part of far more games than it would be if there were more options, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I think that with decks that have cards like Unleash, cards like Implosion, cards like Muster, you're probably going to still play Knife Juggler. But I think that the introduction of more cards, it's more likely to see a card like that kind of get phased out when there's more attractive options based on what your deck really wants to do.
I should put Knife Juggler in my Priest deck and give it a 2-drop.
They have Knife Juggler for Priest deck. It's called Flame Juggler.
Flame Juggler.
Flame Juggler. Yeah.
That's the Knife Juggler.
Oh, man. Yeah. All right, next up, let's see. We've got... Actually, a question for you, Brian. Will you ever make a total switch to Hearthstone?
Will I ever make a total switch to Hearthstone?
Yeah.
I mean, for me, I spend more of my time playing Hearthstone than I do playing Magic by, like, a lot now. But I still, you know, I still love Magic. Magic has been sort of responsible for most of the best elements of my life. most of my good friends, my like job that I've had, you know, for years and years. And I mean, I'm in the Magic Hall of Fame, so I can just go to the Pro Tours and not have to worry about trying to qualify for them and everything if I don't want to attend more events. So it's unlikely that I ever like just stop playing Magic whatsoever. But I mean, the amount of time that I spend on Hearthstone now is pretty close to full time as it is. So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that last question was from Janik Bergman. And all right, for you, Trump here, from Sparkly Yuna, do you think Silence Mechanic will eventually completely lose value, especially in the light of the fact that minions with new mechanics keep getting introduced in the game and get included into decks?
Short answer, no. Long answer, suppose that the minions were to... Actually, it is possible for Silence to lose value. That would happen in the case where spells became really good and or minions came up in a way that like couldn't be silenced. For example, Druid of the Claw, like where it would basically just come in with big stats and then you choose and not be a buff. Or like very minor buffs, like all the Dragon Priest cards. I don't think there's not many targets to silence there, other than Chillmaw, really. Going off of just quick memory. Yeah, a lot of decks right now are really considering not running the Owl, because of course a 2-mana 2/1 is really bad. And it's often a choice of, oh man, do I want to add that extra utility? Is it even out there? So even right now, that choice is being made. So... it entirely depends on whether or not, like, big effects need to be silenced.
Do we need more silence minions?
God, no.
No, it's a... I think it needs to be in the game, like, just to give certain decks options against things that they would have a hard time dealing with. Priest is a hard time dealing with Sylvanas, for example. Even if I don't play silence in my Priest deck, it's nice to have the option. But yeah, it's just one of those effects that's going to like rotate in and out of the metagame depending on how good it is, how many important death rattles there are, how difficult it is for your deck to deal with them. It'd be cool to have like a Priest 2/1 for 2 that silenced a minion. You like chose to silence a minion or give it 2 extra health. But that's more of a Druid effect. I don't know. But yeah, it doesn't need to be more, really, I don't think.
Well, I think there does need to eventually be more because they haven't introduced one for a while. I mean, they did introduce one in this set. Props to anyone who can think of it.
Yeah, Silence a Demon.
Yeah, Silence
a
Demon.
Oh, Silence a Demon.
Silence a Demon.
Oh, my gosh.
But it's just the volume of cards. Like, they probably do need to put a Silence in here eventually. And it does need to be kind of a general check against like something incredibly unfair that could happen, such as Deathlord Divine Spirit. If the threat of silence weren't there, then that would be a real thing.
I mean, why do they need to be more though? Like there are already, if you want silence, you have options to play Owl or Spellbreaker, no matter what class you are. Like I don't know if you need more of them. You know, like those are gonna, unless those cards go away, you still have that as sort of a fallback worst case scenario.
You do, but it just feels like as there are more cards, there should also be like maybe one more silence option.
I don't know. I actually think silence is like one of the lamest parts of Hearthstone. Like, I recognize it's a safety valve and it's pretty important that it exists. But I think that if there are a significant number of popular and efficient ways to silence minions, it means that you, like, the coolest part of cards, which is their abilities, like their card text, is easy to eliminate, and that's lame. Like, if you know, things like Divine Spiriting your Death Lord are just totally worthless because everyone always has a significant number of silences, you know, then no one will ever try to do these cool things, and everything is just about the raw stats of minions, and that's what's actually the least fun about Hearthstone, is how much the numbers on cards matter, and when things get silenced, that's all that matters, is the numbers on the cards.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right, last question we have right here is Robert Acevedo for Reynad. Lord of the Arena is the only tournament of its kind, but few and far between. Many talented arena players haven't had the opportunity to participate over popular constructed players. Would you consider making it a regular event?
Okay.
Convinced me.
I mean, it happens. I mean, it happened. How many have we had now? We've had three or four, right? How many Lord of the Rings have we had?
We've had four.
Four, right? Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's.
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to run a tournament. I'm still picking exactly. Because, like, if you run it bad, it's so bad for, like, the reputation of the brand. Like, with Tempo Storm, I think we're both the least safe and the most safe with how we run tournaments. Like, I always make sure that the people most experienced and best at it are the ones making everything happen. Everything's micromanaged to the point where, down to the graphics and the people involved, it like runs smoothly. Ever since the first couple that I organized myself, I just realized like the need for people that are better than me at doing it, like more organized and everything. And it, so like as far as the production, it's very safe every time. Like there are people that are competent running it, which is important. But then like for the format itself, it's always. We go out there, you know, like we're the only people doing arena stuff. We're the only people doing like challenge stone and stuff with Crypt and all that. It's hard to, I guess, find the resources to do a regular event of any sort that meets quality standards. Like I would like to do Lord of the Arena way more often than we have been. It was like the first, to my knowledge, like streamer run tournament ever. It was like 2 years ago or something. We did it, or a year and a half, and it's still around to this day. People still like it, but yeah, I'd like to branch it out and have it give exposure to the great arena players that you don't see as much on streams and stuff. You know, we've tried to do that a bit. We've had guys like Guardsman Bob on it. We've had Ratsma.
Ratsma this last time, yeah.
Yeah, it'd be cool to do it more often. It's just it's hard to justify like, okay, do I do more Lord of the Arenas or do I find like another cool type of format that no one's doing and do that because there's so many things you can do with Hearthstone that is not a conquest league like every other company is doing. And it's like, yeah, like I don't know, like for me personally, I don't care what the prize money is behind an event. I care about because as a viewer, you're not getting any of that money. Who cares if it's $500,000 or if it's 3,000, right? It doesn't matter. You want to see a cool event with a cool format that hasn't been seen before, that's exciting to watch. So that's the important thing for me, is like I'd like to do more Lord of the Arenas, yes, but hopefully we can do that as well as like new cool formats on top of it.
Yep, couldn't agree with you more. There's still plenty of things, ideas that are out there that haven't been executed yet, so excited to see what else Tempo Storm has to come out in the near future. But I think that's going to be it, guys. I think we'll wrap up the show now and have you guys do some shout-outs, plugs, whatever you guys want to do. Trump, you want to start off?
Hi, I'm Trump. This is a good show.
Yes. Brian?
Nothing in particular in mind, but, you know, thanks for having me on. This was fun. It was kind of amusing that, you know, under the show Value Town, which has actually been the team name.
Exactly. Well, you guys
competing under.
Right.
For the ATLC, which we actually leave for tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So, you know, everyone in chat who, you know, may want to come cheer Trump and I on, that will be later this week. So be sure to check that out.
Yeah, definitely good luck to you two with that. And so for a lot of money, too. It's going to be pretty big. It's in Dallas, right?
Plano, in fact.
Plano, yeah. Plano's a little north of Dallas.
Right outside Dallas. But yeah. Amusingly, I actually have family that lives there. So.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So hopefully I'll see them sometime, you know, at the event. Then they'll also be at my wedding the following weekend.
Oh, you're getting married? I didn't know.
I am, yeah.
Oh, congrats, man.
Thank you.
I didn't know that. That'd be cool. You gonna stream it?
you know, the umpteenth person to ask. we considered it, but I don't think the venue, it's like a winery. They don't think they have good enough internet.
Oh, okay. Let's do that. That might have been the biggest Hearthstone stream we have this year. That could have been interesting. Raynad, anything? Plugs, shoutouts?
Shout out to you, Chris, for coming back. I mean, it's awesome to have Valley Town, you know, back. I don't know how often you're going to do it, but that's cool to have, like, a good podcast thing for sure. Or not, like it's just like a talk show. Mm-hmm. So, thanks for having me on. Thank you for referencing tempestrum.com's Medicine Snapshot TM for all of your becoming legendary needs. You know, good website, not the best. I do personally get bored from time to time from winning too much after using it. At which point I have to buy a variety of other games at reasonable prices at g2a.com using the Tempo.
He is a master. He's legendary at promo.
And shout out to Twitch, Funk, Namecheap, all of our sponsors. And that's all I got.
All right,
if
man.
If you're at ATLC, cheer on Tempo Storm if any of you guys are going to be there.
No. <that's> it. Yeah, it's going to be a pretty good rivalry there. It'll be good stuff. But I want to thank you three for coming on. It's been an amazing discussion. I know the community's been really excited about seeing you three really talk through the cards, at least some of these cards, for the first time together. So really, really great and happy with the episode. I know a lot of people have been asking like how regular I'm going to do this. Honestly, I didn't have any plans, like set plans going into this episode. I just wanted to see how it kind of felt really just doing this again. And I think it went well. So I can tell you that it felt really good and I plan on doing more. I can't really commit to like every week yet, but every week is a definite possibility. I'll at least say that. But definitely more Valley Towns to come, and hopefully some more great guests like these guys. So VODs, guys, if you missed any of the shows, will be on youtube.com/champmanv. I'll have them up shortly after the show. I didn't get a chance to get them going during the show like I used to, just because I'm not used to that yet. But I'll definitely post them right after this. And then so you can check them out there. But until then, guys, for Trump, Raynad, Brian Kibler, and myself, Champ MV, we'll see you next time. Later.